618-2110. WPFW, changing the world one live event at a time.
WPFW must move by December 2024 and will be hosting a series of events and presenting special programming to raise the funds necessary for our new home. We kick off these efforts Saturday through Sunday, April 6th and 7th, with Jazz is the Teacher, Funk is the Preacher, 2 days of programming dedicated to the jazz and funk idioms. From the searing riffs of the J.B. Horns to Les McCann's soulful piano comping to the Art Ensemble of Chicago's funk-drenched composition themed to Yo-Yo, jazz and funk have always been intertwined. We're hoping that the music inspires you to support this effort by visiting WPFWFM.org to make a tax-deductible secure donation to our relocation fund. That's Jazz is the Teacher, Funk is the Preacher, Saturday and Sunday, April 6th and 7th, from midnight to midnight. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Inside Out, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, two-spirit, intersex, asexual plus, that's LGBTQ2IA+ radio show right here on WPFW 89.3 FM. We come to you live every Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on air or streaming online at WPFWFM.org. You can also find an archive of all of our past shows on the podcast app by searching Inside Out Collective or on the archive online. And also, anytime you want to join in the conversation, you can call the number 202-588-0893. My name is Gregory Allen Datu Sedana. I am the president and co-founder of Can't Stop, Won't Stop Consulting and Can't Stop, Won't Stop Education Fund, chief creative officer of Greg Dances, co-founder of the People's Collective for Justice and Liberation, and number one international best-selling author of Be the Boss Now, and host of its accompanying podcast. I am a proud member of the Inside Out Radio Collective and serve as the host for the first Monday of every month. Our show, Inside Out, illuminates and celebrates the rich diversity of the LGBTQ2IA+ identities, experiences, and issues that impact our everyday lives. The groundbreaking show has aired since 2008 and is DC's only show of its kind on the FM dial and one of only a handful in the country. April, y'all, in case you didn't know, some celebrate April's Diversity Month, which is a time to recognize and celebrate the beauty of our unique cultures, backgrounds, and traditions. Diversity also, for some, is an entry point, and for me, must also include the work of inclusivity, equity, and justice. And so I am super excited about the conversation that we're going to have tonight. And so let's go ahead and get started with tonight's show with our theme, Celebrating Diversity Month, with culture shaper and executive director of Scale for Change, Katie Waters. Now let me introduce our esteemed guest. Katie Waters, she, her, is a seasoned political organizer and advocate for social justice with an intersectional lens. As a queer femme hailing from Texas, she believes running effective, efficient, and racially equitable organizations isn't an option, it's a mandate. As executive director of Scale for Change, she leads with a focus on equity and ensuring effective organizational strategies. She has over a decade of experience in political advocacy and grassroots organizing and specializes in facilitating white allyship spaces within progressive organizations. And Lord knows we need those. She holds a bachelor's degree in social work from the University of Texas at Austin, and she is committed to advancing progressive values while finding joy in pop culture and spending time with her community. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you so much, Greg. I am so excited to be here with you celebrating Diversity Month. It's my birthday month. It's Aries season. It's going to be fun.
It's all of the things, and we also kicked off Mercury in retrograde this week, today as well. So
perfect, love it.
It's all the things. It's all the things. All right. To kick off our conversation, I want to ask you a question that I've asked every single one of my guests that have been with me on Inside Out Radio. The question is, in the spirit of organizer and hero and shero of the civil rights freedom movement, Ella Baker, who are your people?
I am nothing without my people. I gravitate towards femmes and genderqueer people. So queer fam is definitely my people. I'm also really drawn to people who have different backgrounds than me. I always want to be learning from people. My other people are organizers. Okay, we need organizers in this world. My best friends are, you know, union reps, also organizing in the progressive space. And I think I have that framework both for my personal and professional life because I spend a lot of time working, honey. So, those are my people. Do you usually share who your people are?
I've shared in different ways. So I can share a little bit about my people if you're, yeah, if you're curious. So my people are hot sauce, spicy food loving.
Okay.
Watching sports when they don't enjoy the camaraderie, but don't sometimes understand what's going on, but act like they do. My people are dancers. They're creatives. And my people are working to live in a world where they can be their whole selves and create the conditions for others to do the same.
Amen. I like that you started with hot sauce, though. That I am not that person, but I think I meet some of the other criteria on your list.
Well, you know, luckily I think expansively about who my people are. But I do like a little spice and a little kick. We love a little spiciness, yeah, in these parts.
Love it.
I know you kind of talked a little bit about organizers, and obviously I read and shared a little bit about your bio. And you kind of said you've kind of been in this for a while. So can you share with folks, like, what was your entry point to organizing and advocacy?
So, student organizing all the way. Student campus organizing is so powerful. I grew up in a little suburban town in the suburb of the suburbs of Dallas called Flower Mound, Texas. And I didn't have a lot of culture there. But one thing that I remember deeply affecting me is, abstinence only education. They brought us all into the auditorium. I was in probably 10th grade, right? Already, all my friends are already sexually active. We're going to this abstinence only training that they've set up for us. And it was so terrible, Greg. It was like, I mean, the two things that really stick out to me were like the very untreated STIs that I don't think are a good reference for what you should actually be looking for. And that gay relationships don't count, like not real. Only marriage is real. And that was hard for me. But it wasn't until I was at UT, I'm a first generation college grad. So I was like remarkable that I was even in Austin. And people were we're on the drag. There's some student organ. I do believe that. I'm going to sign up. And I went to a rally. I did a few legislative visits. Fascinating in Texas. You would think that medically accurate sex ed is not controversial. But the rest is really history. I started organizing with Planned Parenthood, and I'm still fighting for bodily autonomy today. I just see the intersection of, of abortion advocacy, which is kind of my specialty, and the attacks on LGBTQ plus folks right now. Like, the intersection for me is bodily autonomy and freedom. That was my entry point. I can't imagine my life being in any other way. It's been very rewarding and hard.
I feel like that's real and kind of an important part of our experience. I know you said it was hard. Do you have an example of something a challenge that you faced and maybe like a lesson you took from that?
Ooh, that's a good question. I feel like one of my favorite things that I've done as an organizer is, and shout out to my mentor, Diana Limon Mercado, because this was her brainchild. I was just the executor. But I was doing community outreach at Planned Parenthood of Greater Texas, so in Austin. And once a month, we would make a one pager of stats about a service that Planned Parenthood provides. So like STI testing, cervical cancer screenings, and we'd give a little goodie bag too. And I would go to every single legislative office in that Capitol. When I was lucky, I had some volunteers to help me, but I just feel like continuing to engage with folks who don't want you to exist is really important, and maintaining the humanity between each other. That was something that was hard to do. My takeaway is, yeah, to just always see the humanity in other people, despite your differences. I think that's what allows me to keep going, because it would be hard otherwise. There are some haters out there.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's one thing that, this is why, I mean, to be honest with you, Diversity Month is a newer thing that I've like tried to bring in as a practice, but I've found, especially following the Black Lives Matter and Movement for Black Lives and the Stop Asian Hate and some of the recent movements that have been calling the need for racial justice and cross-racial solidarity. I found that, like, you know, there's different people are on their own journeys and therefore need different opportunities and different entry points to kind of understand. And I think sometimes, even as I think about my own journey, I've been really lucky to have mentors, femtors, coaches, teachers who have politicized me and taught me a lot of things earlier on that I think sometimes I take for granted. And that the things that I think that like everybody knows and understands is actually not the case. And so especially as I do consulting work, as I work with different organizations, I'm reminded like, oh, wow, it's important that I remember that not everyone maybe had the same set of folks that were surrounding them, pushing them, agitating them, asking them questions, giving them things to read and listen to them in the same way, right? Especially with a particular political analysis and a political lens. So I appreciate you sharing that, because I think, you know, especially for folks whose goal and mission it is to try to expand the number of folks around a political consciousness and around a set of issues that impact everyday lives, like bodily autonomy, that sometimes, like, I think the work to, you know, you said hard is like, it is hard sometimes. And so how do we find and identify different things that we could offer to people as entry points? And I think things like Diversity Month can seems accessible or is seen accessible, especially in some other contexts. And so how do we leverage this Diversity Month or a month like Diversity Month to help educate and agitate folks to action?
Yeah, Greg, that's reminding me of when you said different entry points. I'm just, you know, I think it's because I'm reflecting on my time at UT, which really was life-changing for me. And I really do feel like it was a privilege. I never expected that I would go to college. I actually had such a bad time in high school. I tried to just go to work and not go to school. But when I was at UT, I had an amazing professor. Her name is Dr. Paula Gerstenblatt. And it was a social justice, intro to social justice. It was trigger warning around the time of Trayvon Martin's murder. And she facilitated a discussion with these white folks, and she's a white woman, and just had the real, being able to dissect with our class, oh, but my dad says to pull yourself up by your bootstraps, and us having a conversation to get us to a place that not everybody's set up with the same tools in this society. And so, yeah, it's just really resonating with me. People don't know everything that you know. And I think being kind and, you know, understanding your impact and taking accountability, but really being gentle with folks. I don't think it serves us to act like we know more than everybody else. Yeah, I'm always trying to learn from folks. So also love femtours, adding that to the vocab.
Yes, I learned that from Carmen Perez Jordan. So she was like, she said, not all the mentors are men. So
amen.
I'm like, that's facts. They're very true.
Yeah.
For those just tuning in, we are celebrating Diversity Month with culture shaper and executive director of Skill for Change, Katie Waters. This is Inside Out Radio Show right here on WPFW 89.3 FM, coming to you live every Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on air or streaming online at WPFWFM.org. If you have any questions or want to join the conversation, you can call 202-588-0893. So, Katie, can you actually tell folks, in case folks aren't familiar, tell us more about your organization. What is Scale for Change?
Yeah, so Scale for Change is a political organizing firm. We offer a few different kinds of services. What we're known for, I would say, is our paid field programming. We also have had some long-running organizing programs. So that's hiring an organizer within an organization to, you know, recruit volunteers, turn them out into in-person action, and just create community where people are. Post-pandemic, it's been harder to get folks back into person. Also, just strategic consulting and operational support. So we are getting ready for the election cycle. And yeah, I think the thing that really makes Scale for Change different, and things that I'm really proud of, we have a very diverse leadership team, mostly people of color, mostly immigrants, mostly queer, I'm pretty sure, mostly femme. And I think that what that brings to our organization is many diverse worldviews and an understanding of how important it is to meet your community where you are, to hire from the communities that we're serving. We always like to leave things a little bit better than we found them. And that's through, you know, paying a living wage, making sure that folks have leadership training. So yeah, that's a little bit about Scale for Change.
Awesome. What are some of the types of organizations that y'all work with?
So some of our longest standing clients are Planned Parenthood Action Fund, Natural Resources Defense Council Action Fund. We're super excited to be starting an organizing program with the ACLU. That's going to be really, really exciting. We also, one of the best projects that we've worked on, I think, is we ran many, many programs in Michigan in 2022. You might remember that there was a big abortion ballot measure, and we did multiple types of organizing to move that work forward. So patient storytelling programs, volunteer programs, obviously paid field programs. But the thing that was extra dope, we also partnered with an amazing coalition, LGBTQ plus coalition, called Hate Won't Win. I think there were 18 partners, but the leaders were Equality Michigan and Human Rights Campaign. And my favorite fact about this program is over 50% of our staff on that Hate Won't Win canvas were LGBTQ plus, and over 99% of our staff were Black and Brown, because we're hiring from the place where we're actually working. So yeah, those are some of our clients, and we're continuing to network. And you know, there's no organization too big or too small to partner with us. If you're interested in organizing, we want to work with you.
And how could folks contact you? What are some of the things that they could reach you at?
Yeah, so our website is where you can start, scaleforchange.org. We are also on LinkedIn. We do a lot of staffing, so LinkedIn is the best place for you to reach us if you would like to work for us. So we're on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, all at Scale for Change, F-O-R, not the number 4. And we are very good at keeping our Linktree updated. So if you want to check out Linktree, it's /Scale for Change. You can see who we're hiring for, what campaigns you can sign up for. Yeah, so Instagram and LinkedIn are the two platforms that we find the most engagement on.
Awesome. Thank you, Katie, for sharing more about Scale for Change. I think it's important for folks to know more about different organizations that are in DC and around the country. So if you aren't following them, if you haven't checked them out, follow them on their social media, check out their website, which is scaleforchange.org. You know, even in your role as executive director, can you share with folks, how do you continue to stay grounded in community, and how does that inform your performance, your decision-making, the way you show up as an executive and a leader?
Mm. So I think the number one way that I stay grounded is intentionally surrounding myself with other organizers. Another thing that I think about when I think about community is I grew up listening to punk, which is like inherently political. I think another entryway, as we've been discussing, to feminism was my love of Kathleen Hanna, Bikini Kill, La Tigra, and just like trying to read books about what I didn't know what they were talking about. So music is very is a very big part of my life. Just this weekend, I went to a hardcore show that was fundraising for UNRWA. So that intersection is very visible in my life. I'm also always trying to learn from other organizers. One of my favorite discussions that I've had recently is I just got married to someone who is from London, and we were going to a march in support of Palestine. And they were like, we got to get there at 1 p.m. It starts at 1 p.m. And I was like, I don't think we have to get there at 1, but let's go, baby. I know you're excited. In London, they do the march first. So they were like, we're going to miss the march. And I was like, no, there's going to be like 4 hours of speakers and then we'll march. So I've shared that like with a couple of other folks. And they're like, oh, that's a good idea. Maybe we should try to like do the march first and march to the rally. Yeah. And, you know, I try to go out to things that my colleagues are working on. We just helped do some of the turnout for the Miffy Prestone Supreme Court case that was heard last week. That is talking about the availability of Miffy, which is one of the medications used in a medication abortion. Another thing that I would love to share is it's so important for me to be surrounded by these kinds of folks. I started at Scale for Change in May of 2020 to run a field firm when we didn't know if field was going to happen. And ultimately we chose, in an abundance of caution to not go on the doors. But we were able to come up with innovative programming to meet folks where they were. We were like, okay, we're just going to do like Slack organizing, text banking, phone banking. People like met and social distanced and still wanted to phone bank in person. And so I just think that staying grounded with my community of organizers helps us meet people where they are, but continue to innovate. You know, we're still using some of those digital spaces that we came up with in 2020. And yeah, I feel like I'm not sure if I'm allowed to ask you questions back, but I would love to hear how you stay grounded too, Greg.
Yeah, you know, there are different things that I do to stay grounded. I mean, similarly to you, I get to work with a variety of organizations and therefore a diverse set of people across multiple identities, multiple positionalities, meaning different roles and different organizations. Yeah. And I stay grounded because there are times where even in conflict or struggle or tension where people have these light bulb moments. And I think like through it all, even through the rough parts, like being able to for folks to have those breakthroughs and to maybe get a key lesson or a learning, that keeps me grounded. One thing that we also do for different organizations that we work with, and I'm referring to the firm that I own and run called Can't Stop, Won't Stop Consulting for those tuning in. And we like to curate playlists. One thing we do is curate playlists. And what some folks don't know, which I'll tell you now, is I actually like sometimes listen to the playlists either when I'm about to do a meeting or something with the organization, or if there's a playlist if there was a playlist that I like really appreciated because I actually found out about new songs, or there'll be songs that I forgot about that people are like, this song is still my jam 30 years later. So that keeps me grounded. And I've been trying to I practice meditation more. And also, as you know, being more in tune in line with like astrology and the cosmos, if you will. And that has also created just a different level of groundedness and rootedness, both for myself, but also in the broader context in which we all exist. And so I'm like, you know, I know we joked about it, but at the top of the hour, I was like, and it's also Mercury in retrograde, which for some folks means that there's going to be like challenges with communication, challenges with technology, challenges with like transportation. And not necessarily like we should be scared of it, but rather like this is an extra time to offer yourself and other people grace, especially if there's like issues with the Zoom network, or if like I was on a call with someone this morning and like I heard the other person on the other line and they couldn't hear me, and I was like, Mercury's Mercurying right now. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. Like I just have to just let it go. So that's another thing. And I think the last thing is around where I live, I have pictures of different people in my life from different stages of my life. So like, I find that sometimes, like even as I'm like in between meetings, you know, in the middle of my dance break, I can do a little dance break. I like look at pictures just to remind myself of like, oh, this moment, or look where I came from, or, you know, seeing the smile and like the people in those faces, like how do I reground myself in the joy in that picture? It's both makes my home feel like home, but also gives me constant and multiple reminders of, even if I may not necessarily be, have the same kind of relationship with some of the people, that like, I have been blessed with, a lot of comrades, a lot of movement mates, a lot of experiences that help shape. And I am a collection of those things. The person I am today is a collection of those things.
Wow, that's very inspiring, Greg. It reminds me. So I love RuPaul. I love RuPaul. And RuPaul just started, like, oh my God, am I doing marketing for RuPaul? Just started a bookstore because of all of the book bans. And I got this text the other day. It says, hey, baby, this is a picture of me at 7 years old. I use it as the wallpaper on my phone to remind me whose precious heart I'm looking after. Try it with the childhood picture of yourself, and I promise your life will improve. I'm like, oh, I love it. I'm going to add some pictures of my mentors too. Yes. I also really love plants. Like, I tend to my plants. It is very soothing for me. And if my plants aren't doing good, it's like an indication to me that I need to tend to myself. Mm. So yeah, I love those examples, Greg.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate you sharing too. Yeah, I think even this thing around you talking about plants, I'm talking about like cosmos and being connected to astrology. Like there's something about being literally physically and or like figuratively connected to a larger being, space. And yeah. I think nature, astrology, the planets, plants, like other living things on the world that we are in. Is super important. So, and I think as we decolonize and, or as some would say, like indigenize more of our collective experience, we'll be reminded of like our roots of like being connected to Mother Earth, being connected to each other in ways that aren't rooted in divide and conquer, which is what some of the systems of oppression has done for us. And so, I part of why we love asking this question and engaging in this conversation as part of Inside Out is like, I think the LGBTQ QIA plus communities are both at the forefront of like the fight for diversity, inclusion, equity, and justice, but they are also at the forefront of the attacks, because conservative folks, right-wing folks know that if queer and trans and gender non-conforming people are free, it'll mean there will be a lot of other people that will be free. And and so I think that there's something about that too, where in the context of a diversity month, in the context of the political and cultural environment that we're in now, like, that we must continue to hold kind of the simultaneity and the duality of like both feeling immense pride and hopefulness as a community, but also the like devastating effects of capitalism and white supremacy and cis heteropatriarchy on our people, especially when our sheer existence is a threat to, or is considered a threat to people who aren't our people in that way. So
yeah.
Which leads me to the next question that I want to ask. Can you speak on the importance of building community and solidarity, especially in uplifting Black, Indigenous, and people of color communities, the LGBTQ2I+, and other marginalized groups?
Yeah, I truly don't understand how people think their organizations or their communities can be like, can thrive without these voices. And Greg, honestly, I'm just putting a two on what you just said. Like, historically successful movements are led by people of color and LGBTQ plus folks. Like Marsha P. Johnson comes to mind, Sylvia Rivera, Angela Davis, Martin Luther King. And so I always prioritize listening to the folks who are most impacted, you know, in this current moment of what's happening in Gaza. I have followed the leadership of my queer Arab friends. I feel so grateful of the knowledge that they share, that they don't have to share, but because they're of their experience, it feels so easy to understand when they're sharing with me. So I have a lot of gratitude for that work. I also like feel inspired and feel creative when I listen to people of color and read their work. I was thinking about when I read Becoming Abolitionist for Derrica Purnell. Listen, my spouse is an anarchist, y'all, and I am not there yet. But I read this Becoming Abolitionist book, which is, it's not about just defunding the police, but actually about how do we create the communities that protect us on our own and even mitigate harm, like what causes harm, people to be harmful in the first place. And it also details multiracial social movements rooted in rebellion, risk-taking, and revolutionary love. Like, when I'm feeling overwhelmed, or like I can't think of the next step, I come back to like things that you've said to me, Greg, things that my femtors have said to me, which is we live in a world of abundance. And that, like, I really have learned that from queer people of color. It's interesting working in spaces where that's not the norm. Greg, I saw this video on TikTok and it was men on one side and women on the other side. And it was like 10 people on each side and they had to pass a hula hoop. They had to hold hands and get the hula hoop from one end to the other. And the men, they're like raising their arms. They're trying to get the thing over each of their arms. And then it goes to the women and one woman just holds the hula hoop and they all walk through. So like we actually need diverse like experiences, worldviews to come up with creative solutions to our problems. I also have a lot of gratitude to do some of the work that I've done in the past with organizations to try to dismantle like institutional racism where we can, like helping white folks understand when they think something's really clear, but they're also, you know, in different levels of the organization and not everybody else has that information. I keep saying grateful, but grateful to have such a talented and diverse team that I get to work with every day. So yeah, I can't think of anything more important than being around diverse voices and diverse lived experiences. It adds, I can't imagine my world without it.
For sure. If you're just tuning in, we are celebrating Diversity Month, which is April, with culture shaper and executive director of Scale for Change, Katie Waters. This is Inside Out Radio Show right here on WPFW 89.3 FM. We come to you live every Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on air or streaming online at WPFWFM.org. If you have any questions or want to join our convo, hit us up, 202-588-0893. To build on the conversation, to build on what you were saying, Katie, I won't name of organizations, but we have had the pleasure and continue to have the pleasure to partner on a couple of projects together that I would say is in the diversity, inclusion, equity, and justice field. You kind of alluded to some of the work that you do in terms of holding space, particularly for white people. Can you help people understand like what might that look like in a workplace context? What are the kinds of conversations? How are they set up? And maybe talk a little bit about your experience with some of those examples.
Yeah. Well, Greg, one of my favorite things about working with Can't Stop, Won't Stop is your outlook that the people that are within the space that we're in actually have a lot of knowledge and hold the key to unlock the change that we need. And so when I was meeting one-on-one with a few folks that got, I was recommended a few folks that I should reach out to that, have been doing racial equity work within the organization. And the thing that I heard a lot of was, yeah, we've done this before and it's been like super theoretical. And I just want to know like what I should actually do. And so we focus on practicing. So one of the most impactful sessions I think I've ever led was creating scenarios around microaggressions that people of color at the organization had actually experienced. And I just gave a short script. It was hot. The thing that was hard is people wanted a lot of detail. They felt like they didn't have all the information they needed, but we went with it. We practiced these microaggressions, interrupting, doing. So it's a couple of people in a scenario, but everybody on the call is listening. And at the end of the scenario, the people who were in the scenario will reflect and then they'll get feedback from the rest of the group. And I think what I often hear in those kinds of feedback sessions is, well, I've seen a person of color do it and they were just way more explicit about what the problem was. So it's really good practice. And something that was very moving to me was, one person reflected, my heart rate is so high just from like practicing interrupting. And so I think giving white people a safe space to feel uncomfortable, which maybe they haven't experienced being uncomfortable, is so powerful. I love the work that we do because it's, the theory is important, and I always hear people say, like, eradicating eventually microaggressions is some of the most powerful work that I've done on these projects.
Awesome. I think it's, I think one thing that, I've learned and as I've seen in organizations is that, I think people go to work, regardless of identity, I think people go to work and say, well, I'm here for work and I'm not necessarily going to talk about these other experiences. Mm. But the reality is that those other experiences inform how you show up at work. And so
absolutely
absent being able to have an opportunity to be able to reflect and to talk about how those experiences inform how you show up at work, whether it's in identity-based groupings, we call them yep. affinity groups or caucuses or allyship spaces, or if it's a place to even talk or even have a container or conversation with your supervisor or colleague and having the right language, or not even the right language, but a language to use that can yeah. be shared is really important. And so I think I'm reflecting with and reflecting on how do we create more opportunities for folks to be able to feel more comfortable doing that, and like what other resources are there that can be offered to folks to also feel like they can engage in ways that are like, not that we have to agree on everything. And Tanya Lee says it's principled struggle, right? Where you like are committed to that you're committed to trying to get to alignment and clarity, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to agree. And that there's a, you know, for me, I take that as like, we can be in conflict. We can not always agree. But that doesn't necessarily mean we're not doing it out of love or out of care for our people. And that I like to say, like, we're building communities of learning and communities of practice. And in the same way, like, we go to the gym to work out because we want to build our muscles. Like, we have to do the same thing in being in relationship with each other, and also having difficult yes. or courageous conversations, right? And so how are we building the muscle of conflict? How are we building, addressing conflict? How do we build the muscle of even engaging in conversations and giving and receiving feedback? Even if it's hard, or even if it's not necessarily what we're used to. And so I appreciate you just sharing some of that, because I think that in this current political moment, folks are attacking critical race theory, are attacking diversity, inclusion, equity programs. And for me, they're attacking it because, one, there's actually like people are teaching the truth about whiteness and about colonization cis heteropatriarchy to students. And they're understanding like, oh, this is why maybe people's experiences are different. Oh, this is why the context about some of these things matter. And also like, they see that it's actually not only educating, but politicizing people, because they're like, yeah. oh, this is why I maybe get treated differently. Oh, it's not just because, it's not actually about necessarily anything I've done per se. It's because I'm in this society that has socialized me
yeah.
in these systems, right? And so I think, so again, like connecting it back to parts of the conversation that we're having since the beginning of the show, is like, that's why for me, it's like, all right, Diversity Month, is it the most exciting month in the world? Probably not, right? Like, I'm not like jumping up and down being like, Diversity Month, hey! But like, maybe there's a corporation that like they're willing to leverage some resources for folks to be able yeah. to move further along in their journey. And so how do we support those folks, especially for folks who maybe haven't had the same opportunities or experiences that maybe give them another or differing worldview?
Yeah. You touched on something that I think is actually probably the most important part of the work, which is relationship building and finding solidarity with each other and how you can collectively leverage your power to see the change that you want. And I could understand how that's scary to folks who don't want to share power. That's a very, very important part of the work. And I'm also just reflecting on what you're saying, Greg, like, I think I started at the beginning of our conversation, like I would have benefited so much from having some real education around the history of the country. And yeah, maybe I would have realized I was queer a little earlier too, if I wasn't told it was fake and made up.
Mm-hmm. This leads to, so there's a couple of questions I want to ask before we end. So I'm going to transition up to some of these last questions.
Okay.
Also questions that I love asking guests on the show. The next question I want to ask you was, when was the last time you felt brave?
When I said my vows to my spouse in February, I mentioned that my partner's from London and we were on a fiance visa. And so we had to plan, right? And so we both knew that we were going to propose to each other, but I just remember when I proposed, I was just like, will you marry me? I didn't like divulge my love. And my partner's the crier. And I was like, Ollie, you're going to cry when you say your vows. So we need to like bring some tissue. I'm the one that cried. They didn't cry. So yeah, I felt really brave and really vulnerable and like, yeah, it was really empowering. When's the last time you felt brave?
Well, before I answer that, I just want to say congratulations. I know that it's still recently. Congratulations to you and Ollie. May this new chapter, this next iteration of y'all's relationship be filled with all the love, care, and the community you deserve. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
I feel the more people can see love and feel love, I think the more that people will be able to help fight for people, for themselves and others to be able to feel it too.
Yeah.
The last time I felt brave, you know, the example that I'll share is there was a client of mine that I've been had in conversation with, and this person is a newer client, so we're still getting to know each other, but I was already getting some spidey senses about some things that were happening, and I was trying to figure out if I should assert and kind of name some of the things that I was feeling, or if I should kind of just wait it out a little bit to kind of gauge or feel. And I, in the moment, even though I was a little, was still trying to figure it out, I was like, you know what, this is like, if I'm feeling this, I tell people if they're feeling it to just to say the thing. And I said the
thing.
And admittedly, they were at first a little taken aback by the fact that I was as honest as I was. But as we had a chance to process it, they actually ended up being very grateful and appreciative that I was willing to even give them that feedback. They hadn't really gotten feedback like that from a consultant or someone that they've worked with in this kind of capacity before. And I think for me it was an affirmation of like, all right, Greg, like trust yourself, trust your instinct, trust your gut. Like it's telling you something, and it's important that you continue to do that, even if it may feel hard. But those moments of bravery is going to help either unlock something or support someone or bring more clarity. Or provide something that is important in that moment. And so, that was something that happened like literally this last week. So,
yeah, I, when those hard conversations happen, have to happen, I try to center myself and like, I really want people to be direct with me. So I need to be direct back. This was especially hard for me when I entered this executive leadership role. I was so used to people like telling me the real, and it took me a while to understand that people were the positionality, could make them fearful. Go you. I know that those are hard, but it was right. It ended up so good.
It did. You know, and I feel like, I will also say that, like, I know sometimes that me or others sometimes are brave, and maybe it's not the outcome that we want either. And so I also want to honor that sometimes our bravery is not always met with what we deserve or what we feel like is the outcome, but that doesn't change. Like, that shouldn't change, and that doesn't and shouldn't change why you did it. And, but there's still a lesson in that too. So offering that broader frame as well.
Love it.
And the last question I want to ask you, you brought up RuPaul, and it's so funny because this is literally what I say, like my RuPaul question for guests. But if you could offer a gem of wisdom to your younger self, and then I would also say, as you give that gem of wisdom, also think about kind of current LGBTQ2I+ youth, what would that gem of wisdom be?
I wish that somebody would have told me that who I am is beautiful and unique. And even if you feel like you don't fit in now, like, you can't even imagine how beautiful of a community you can build, and surround yourself with. And from my Texas point of view, I would also wish that someone would have told me that intimacies with other genders count. Yeah.
I love that. Thank you. I think, and I'll just share as we get ready to close out, I think one thing that I would offer to my younger self is that, is do you, boo. And that,
okay, that makes it short and simple.
The things that you're thinking about, the questions you're asking yourself about what people are going to think or do, don't matter, because you should live your life for yourself, but live it grounded and rooted in community, in your family, however you want to define that. And how you show up is going to impact your people and the world.
As Mama Ru would say, if they don't pay your bills, pay them no mind.
Mama Ru. well, you know what? We're getting ready to close out the show, Katie. So is there anything else that you want to lift up to the listeners in terms of either what they can follow, any other information about how they can stay connected with you?
Yeah, thanks for offering. So I will uplift again, follow Scale for Change on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. We're at Scale for Change. You can check out our Linktree /Scale for Change to keep up with our actions. If you want to come work with us, we're usually hiring. So you can check out our positions there. And the other thing that I would love for people to think about is, showing up for abortion advocacy, LGBTQ+ organizing. I encourage you to reach out to your local Planned Parenthood, get engaged in their organizing programs. It's act.plannedparenthoodaction.org/groups to find a local group. Greg, I just want to thank you so much for inviting me. I love having this space and time to reflect with you. It's always feels like a real privilege.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you so much for being. Thanks to you. Thanks to the engineering team and all of you for tuning in to Inside Out LGBTQ Radio right here on WPFW 89.3 FM. We invite you to join us again next Monday and every Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. on air or streaming online at WPFWFM.org. Thanks again and have a great evening, everyone.
WPFW must move by December 2024 and will be hosting a series of events and presenting special programming to raise the funds necessary for our new home. We kick off these efforts Saturday through Sunday, April 6th and 7th, with Jazz is the Teacher, Funk is the Preacher, 2 days of programming dedicated to the jazz and funk idioms. From the searing riffs of the J.B. Horns, to Les McCann's soulful piano comping, to the Art Ensemble of Chicago's funk-drenched composition, themed to Yo-Yo, jazz and funk have always been intertwined. We're hoping that the music inspires you to support